This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. In Michigan, we can jokingly say water rules, but just what are the rules when it comes to public access to our many waterways? Wayne State law professor Noah Hall is here now to help us sort out the legends, the secondhand stories, from what the statutes actually say. Today, the do's and don'ts when it comes to the Great Lakes. Welcome to Stateside, Noah.
Thanks for having me.
So when we first started researching this topic, a colleague told us a saying which went something like, where land, water, and people meet, lawyers will make a lot of money. Is there truth to that?
Lawyers make a decent living, unfortunately. Yeah, I would say where land, water, and people meet, unfortunately, conflicts pop up. And when people can't resolve those conflicts, they tend to call a lawyer.
And we do get territorial, especially when it comes to, you know, the beachfront property of our lakeshore cottage or that type of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd also like to suggest something else. Really, where people, land, and water come together, oftentimes great things come about as well. We don't just see disputes. One of the really amazing things about the Great Lakes is that more often than not, I think they bring people together rather than divide them apart.
All right. For clarification, there are some specific terms, Noah, for laws that regard different types of water. Could you kind of give us a brief explanation so we're all on the same page with the vocabulary?
Sure. Oh, boy. Water law has great terminology. We could start with the term riparian. It's the most important term in the field of water law. A riparian means property adjacent to a water body, or more commonly, a person who owns property adjacent to a water body. The most important thing about a riparian, though, is a riparian doesn't own the water. The riparian owns the property next to the water and has a right to use the water reasonably, but doesn't own the water itself.
All right. So that's a term that we're going to be thinking of and hearing. So let's get back to the beginning. When Michigan was part of the Northwest Territory, what were the rules for using the Great Lakes back in the day?
Interestingly, the most important rule in many ways for the use of the Great Lakes comes from Michigan's history as part of the Northwest Territories. The Northwest Ordinance of 1787 established that the Great Lakes and their connecting waterways would forever be free and open to the public. So from day one, really before day one, before our constitutional government was even formed, the Northwest Ordinance made clear that this notion that we now call the public trust doctrine would apply to Great Lakes waters, keep them open and free. Nobody could own the Great Lakes. No government can even sell the Great Lakes. They're a public trust for all of us.
So when did rules begin to evolve and why?
Well, the original rules involving water use were actually very protective. Michigan, like most states, was originally something called a natural flow state. Natural flow meant that the legal rule is that you can't disturb the natural flow of a river or a lake or a stream in any way. What that meant then is that you couldn't alter the water course, you couldn't take water out, you couldn't pollute it, you really couldn't use it in any industrial sense. So the natural flow rule lasted until about the Industrial Revolution.
And then it was inconvenient.
It became inconvenient and got in the way of the way that we wanted to make money in Michigan, which was to use water to power industry, to grow agriculture, to fuel our cities. And so the natural flow rule gave way to the reasonable use rule. Reasonable use means that you could use the water, you have to use it reasonably, and what is reasonable is going to depend on the circumstances, your use, and everyone else's use.
And I suspect there was a lot of wiggle room in there.
There's a lot of wiggle room in reasonable use, and of course it's a very vague standard. But what's really kind of interesting is how easy it is to resolve disputes when reasonable use is your standard. Remember, it's not what I think is reasonable or what you think is reasonable, but what an objective third person would think is reasonable. So if you step back from your own circumstances and you look at really all of the circumstances around you, you might find that, of course, taking half the water out of a stream that you share with hundreds of other people is not reasonable.
And anyone would agree with that.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
So is reasonable use what we have today in 2015?
Exactly. Okay. Reasonable use is still our guiding principle for water use. In many ways, reasonable use has become the guiding principle for a lot of our laws involving environment and natural resources. But we have a lot of statutes and regulations that have codified and made really in a lot of ways bureaucratic and specific what reasonable use means in many circumstances.
And if we looked at the community of Great Lakes states, is it pretty much the same around or does it vary?
One of the things that makes cooperation around the Great Lakes fairly easy is that all of the Great Lakes states have basically the same laws. And in many ways, that's because we have basically the same values about the Great Lakes. We all want to protect the Great Lakes, but we all want to use the Great Lakes for economic development. None of the Great Lakes states have taken a position that they want to absolutely protect the Great Lakes, nor have any really wanted to deplete it. It's all been a recognition that we share the Great Lakes, and we want to use it reasonably to balance our economic uses with really just our use and enjoyment of the water itself.
We're talking water rules with Wayne State law professor Noah Hall, who's got expertise in water law. And today we're drilling down on the do's and don'ts of enjoying the Great Lakes. So let's say you and a friend are enjoying a day on a Lake Michigan beach. You're at a public beach and you want to go for a nice long walk to enjoy that, you know, combination of water, wind, sun, and sand. Can you walk along the beach indefinitely?
That's a great question, and fortunately, the Michigan Supreme Court a few years answered it in the affirmative. You can walk up and down the shores of the Great Lakes. There's a simple rule. You need to stay what's below the ordinary high watermark on the beach. The ordinary high watermark is really the point on the beach where the sand ends and the vegetation takes over. But as long as you stay on the sandy beach, you're staying in what's considered the public portion of the Great Lakes. It goes back to that public trust doctrine, which has been part of our legal heritage since at least the Northwest Ordinance, that not only are the Great Lakes and their waters free and open to the public, but the shorelines are free and open to the public. And the Michigan Supreme Court made clear that the shoreline up to the high water mark.
So that means I don't have to have one foot in the water and one on the sand. It would be wherever the high water mark would be, which I think we all pretty well understand what that looks like.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm a pretty fit guy. Strolling up onto a dry beach isn't a problem for me, or strolling in the water. But the case was brought by quite an elderly woman, Joan Glass, who couldn't just, you know, move up and down the beach at will. She wanted to walk a nice path really along what we'd call the firm wet sand. Mm-hmm. And her neighbors objected to this, although they admitted in their depositions that they also walked up and down the beach. So it was both hypocritical and probably not a good policy position for the state. You have a right to stroll down the shoreline, but you can't come up onto the upland property. You can't enter improvements. Mm-hmm. And the Michigan Supreme Court really only created this one narrow holding that you have a right of beach walking to further your public access. They didn't even talk about things like beach volleyball, putting down your beach blanket, having a picnic for an hour. All of that might be outside of your public rights.
Well, give us a sense, Noah, where do the rights of the property owner intersect, or perhaps more accurately, collide with someone walking along a beach?
Well, that's a great phrase to use. I wouldn't say that interests of a property owner either intersect or collide. I think they overlap. Hmm. And that's what makes it tricky. So if you own Great Lakes shoreline, your title might give you some sense of property ownership down to the water's edge. But the public trust in Great Lakes water and the Great Lakes shoreline comes up to that high water mark. In that area, the beach, the shoreline, we have overlapping public and private rights. This gives some people fits, but I think if you just take a less absolutist view, it makes a lot of sense.
And think overlap.
Exactly. Yeah. What it means is that as the private owner, you own the property. Of course, somebody else can't come and build, set up camp, or use that public right of way in any way that creates a nuisance to your ownership. But at the same time, you can't put up a fence and keep the public from walking up and down the shoreline. And it turns out, I think, that for most shoreline property owners, this is a good common sense rule. None of them want to live on a shoreline that's divided by fences. They all want to live on a shoreline that they can share and use and enjoy together. So that means having legal rules that overlap your public and private rights.
Let's talk watercraft, Noah. What are the rules for putting a boat into one of the Great Lakes?
Here it comes down to, again, this notion that the Great Lakes are a public resource. The surface water of the Great Lakes and all navigable waters in the state of Michigan are free and open to the public. But there's a catch. You got to get to the water. The land surrounding the water is not always free or open to the public. So the most common and straightforward way of accessing public water is with a public access site, either,
certainly,
of course, at a public park or a DNR-maintained public boat launch.
Mm-hmm.
But anywhere that you find public access to the water's edge, you can legally put your craft into the water. So this opens the door to road ends and unimproved but publicly owned access points along waterways, as well as, unfortunately, we get some disputes where folks who live on lakes try to close off access to their lake by buying up and making private all of the property around the lake.
And we will be in a future interview talking about the inland lakes. If I'm out on Lake Michigan, let's just say, or Lake Huron, and I see a nice-looking secluded area, can I just pull in and beach my boat for a few hours?
Depends what you mean by pull in and beach your boat. You can certainly anchor your boat in the waters and come up on shore and use that public shoreline. However, the permanence of your anchoring is going to become an issue. You don't have a right to permanently occupy somebody else's shoreline property. You have a right to use it to assist your navigation. The best way actually to really understand a lot of these disputes before you get kind of into the technical weeds is to look at what the laws are really about. The public purpose behind the Great Lakes is to ensure navigation, fishing, commerce, recreation on the Great Lakes. It's not to take someone's private property, but it's to allow the public to use those really common sense purposes of a shared water body. So as long as what you're doing is consistent with navigation or conducting commerce on the Great Lakes, fishing, one of the most traditional uses of waterways, then the overlapping public rights and private rights will resolve themselves pretty nicely.
Do you ever hear repeated stories about the Great Lakes that are just stupid, silly, totally wrong?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of myths about the Great Lakes and about Great Lakes water law. Probably the biggest, I would say, myth or really misunderstanding, mm-hmm. and it's understandable because it's complicated, is why Great Lakes water levels come up and down. Folks will sometimes think that the water levels are rising and dropping because of diversions or the city of Chicago's water use, which does take several billion gallons a day of Lake Michigan water and send it down the Mississippi. But by and large, the fluctuation in Great Lakes levels is not really due to any human uses and really is actually part of the natural cycles and are good for the lakes. They're not meant to be the same year after year. That's not a healthy lake system. They fluctuate. We have to give the lakes the room to sort of be.
Finally, no, any pending litigation that could change current laws for the Great Lakes?
No, there's always a lot of disputes over exactly what you can do on the shoreline and where you can do it. But by and large, most of those disputes over time get resolved under the same legal principles. And I think as long as folks realize that it's a shared resource, nobody owns it, they can understand where the laws are going to go.
Noah Hall is a professor at the Wayne State University Law School, where he specializes in environmental and water law. And he's the author of Modern Water Law, Private Property, Public Rights, and Environmental Protections. Tomorrow, Noah will be with us to focus on rules for Michigan's rivers. Thank you so much, Noah.
Thanks for having me.